Hey, what's up? John Doherty here for Radio Tacoma's Climate Talk, the place where we talk about everything climate, always respectfully, ever striving to be fact-based, open to divergent perspectives, and always actively optimistic. Today we're talking with Dr. Lowell Weiss. He is a scholar of modern American literature and the environment with a passionate interest in urban forestry, which he brings to Tacoma, and environmental justice, among other interests. He's taught at universities, including the Center for Global Education in Lima, Peru. He's a writer on literature and environmental humanities. He's the author of a book, Ecospatiality, a Place-Based Approach to American Literature. Lowell lives right here in good old Tacoma, where he works as executive director for the Tacoma Tree Foundation. So here we go.
Dr. Lowell Weiss, welcome to Climate Talk.
Thanks so much.
Good to have you with here. So let's just jump right in. Looking at your bio, you have a history in academia as a professor, and you're also an author. We'll talk a little bit more about that later on. English is your subject, and here you are, the executive director of the Tacoma Tree Foundation. So how did that happen?
Well, my whole career has been about the overlap of people and place and stories. And so that's the connection that I see. But I studied American literature and the environment and taught writing and literature at the college level for several years. And in the meantime, I really developed an interest in environmental policy, and I worked for the City of Tacoma's Office of Sustainability back in 2015. And at that time, we were working on the environmental action plan for the City of Tacoma. So I got to be involved in the process for understanding all of the city's policies, the plans it wanted to enact in those next 5 years. And so I really got a behind-the-scenes view on how the city creates policy and implements policy related to the environment and sustainability. So that was a unique opportunity. And then after that, I realized that trees were my favorite thing and the thing that no one seemed to be working on. So I started a grassroots effort called Tacoma Needs Trees. And that was a community effort to call attention to the urban forest crisis that we have.
So I think we have a real opportunity here, because it seems like so much of the time we're looking into the future. Comments are made, promises are made, plans are made, so on and so forth. And you were on the Sustainability Commission in 2015, I believe, as you said. So let's take this opportunity to look back. So from where we were in 2015 and some of the promises, plans, et cetera, that were made, how did we do?
Well, in terms of the tree canopy issue, it's hard to say because we measure so infrequently. There was a measurement in 2009 that said we had 19% tree canopy, and a measurement in 2018 that said we had 20%. So whether that's a rounding error or real progress, I think we'll find out the next time they measure, which is going to be around 2030. But from what I can tell, there haven't been any major action to preserve our tree canopy. And that's really where the difference can be made. We have to preserve the existing trees that we have, because we can't plant trees fast enough to make up for the loss of those mature trees and all the benefits they have.
Yeah. Okay. So that's an interesting perspective, and probably not one that the general public has. It's coming to mind for me. This was probably down in Lakewood. I drive down through there every once in a while, going to the VA facility at American Lake. And all of a sudden, there was this big stand of Douglas firs. By big, I mean, it must have been 2 or 3 acres. And in the matter of a week, it was all gone. And so what kind of I know we're talking about Lakewood in this particular case, but what kind of resources does the city have to, I mean, a lot of people just say, look, it's my tree, it's my land. If I want to cut it down, I'm going to cut it down. So what resources can be brought to bear to preserve our trees?
This is such a great question. And I think it depends depending what jurisdiction you're in. But Lakewood actually has a law on the books that preserves trees, or is intended to preserve trees, over a certain size of diameter. And so you're not supposed to cut a tree over X number of inches. And I think it's like 9 inches or something without a permit. But that means that you have to get the permit, and then the city might just green light it, depending on, you know, your situation. In general, I think in this country, the attitudes on private property mean that cities don't like to tell people what to do on their private property, even when they're kind of holding some of our infrastructure, like these trees really are. And so the cities that have grown their tree canopies in the last few decades usually have implemented some version of preservation of trees and then enforcement when trees are cut down. So if you are cutting in a way that's illegal in your city, the city would enforce a fine or some kind of penalties on people for that kind of behavior. So it comes down to protecting the trees that are on the public property and then maybe creating incentives for people to leave the trees on their own property. So it's a patchwork approach. But I think, like I said, the cities that have done well have enacted strong policy and then enforced those policies.
So it seems almost to me like we got a situation here where what is good for the individual, i.e. a landowner that wants to cut down a tree, and what's good for the community are a little bit at odds. And yet when the permitting process, I'm just guessing here, but when the permitting process takes place, it's just the city planner of some kind, plus the person seeking the permit. And the public, generally speaking, is unaware that it's going on for whatever reason. And so are we stuck with the system the way it works?
I don't think we are. I think we're in a system that is flexible based on what people want and on demand from the public. So the city of Tacoma, just for example, because I have the most familiarity with Tacoma's policies, the city has goals for increasing our tree canopy, and it has a really comprehensive plan in place for how they should do that. But what hasn't happened is funding for that plan so that all the actions get implemented. And so there's real room for people to lobby and advocate the government to increase spending for urban forestry, because we know exactly how to make progress, but and it's right there in the plans that the city council has adopted. And so it's really a matter of calling attention to the issue. In Tacoma, it's about saying we don't want to be in last place anymore, because Tacoma has the fewest trees per acre of any city in Western Washington that has measured the tree canopy. So we're at 20% and Seattle's at 28%. So it might be a little bit about some community pride and saying that we want to have a beautiful city that is healthy for everybody, that has clean air for everybody and clean water for our environment. So I think those are some areas where people can advocate just to increase funding for smart investments in our environment. And I think in a lot of cases too, it's been proven that when we invest in our tree canopy, that has health benefits and social benefits on top of the environmental benefits that are obvious to the environmental crowd.
Yeah. So I'm pretty sure that just about every person you'd ask, hey, do you like trees, is probably going to say yes. Yet here we are at the bottom of the stack. Are there times where citizen input could be focused, like hearings or planning commissions, et cetera, that if they knew about it, it might make it more likely that they're going to give that input?
Yes. There are certain opportunities to talk to city council when there are plans going up for a discussion. For example, this year in Tacoma, they're about to be proposing some code updates for how street trees are regulated.
Hmm.
That would be a great opportunity for people to stand up and say, we care about the urban forest and we want the city to do more on our behalf, because that right of way is part of the public property, but the city treats it as private responsibility. So it's public ownership, private responsibility. And if you have a tree on your property that's in the right of way, you have to pay for anything that has to do with planting or maintenance, and you have to get a permit for it. So that's an area where the city could do more on behalf of the citizens to take charge of the trees, to add maintenance help when there's an issue or a sidewalk that's buckling or something. And so supporting street tree code updates is one thing we can do this year. In general, I think just letting council members know that you support action on urban forestry is really important too. And then another one I would recommend is supporting a tree preservation ordinance, because preserving trees is really the only way forward to growing the amount of tree coverage that we have.
So a lot there. So in terms of tree preservation ordinances, is there a draft on the books somewhere right now for the city of Tacoma?
There's no tree preservation ordinance anywhere drafted that I know of, but there are examples from many peer cities, and the urban forest management plan that Tacoma has summarized all these best practices from other cities. And we've known about the tree canopy issue for at least 30 years. Tacoma had a plan on the books in the early 90s to increase the urban tree canopy and was unable to make progress because of an unwillingness to take bold steps.
So just listening to you talk about, let's say, our unpropitious history around trees, how do you keep your enthusiasm or your optimism with this task that you've taken on?
The way I keep my optimism about this is that you were right when you said everybody loves trees. I mean, it's kind of a popular thing across the political spectrum.
Yeah.
Even in terms of environmental action, trees are something that people can rally around. They make our communities more beautiful. And so I love being out in the community talking about trees and the importance of them. And on top of that, I see some progress at the city level for understanding that this is not just an environmental issue. It's a issue about human health and well-being. And so we have new information about how the trees are distributed and how the history of investing in certain neighborhoods over others has led to inequities in air quality, inequities in human health outcomes. And that's all correlated really closely to where the trees are. It's not the only factor, but trees are part of the solution when it comes to creating a healthier and more sustainable city for everyone.
So I just wanted to back up just one quick second here too, and for clarification. So you were talking about that area along the street, I think usually between the sidewalk and the street. It's come as a surprise to me in the past. And I think to a lot of other people, like, well, you know, you don't think that's your responsibility, but it is. And so what is the process for planting a tree in one of those strips? I mean, can I just go out and plant a tree in that strip?
The official process is that if you want to put a tree in or prune a tree or take a tree out that lives on that public property in the right of way, you're supposed to get a permit to do that. In practice, people are cutting trees in the right-of-way all the time with no penalty, and people are also planting trees without getting the permission required. So what you'll see is the city of Tacoma has a list of pre-approved street trees, and they include small, medium, and large. So you want to choose a tree that is suitable for your site, whether you have a 2-foot-wide planting area or a 12-foot-wide planting area, or a power line above or a utility line below. Mm. You just want to be careful about where you put that tree and think about how big it's going to be and choose it carefully. So you can't just go out and plant whatever you want in the right of way. Mm. And if you do, you'll have to live with the consequences.
Yeah, well, I guess full disclosure here, I've taken some pride about it in the past, but maybe I've got some guilt to bear on the issue. I used to live on Tacoma Avenue up by the Annie Wright School, and I planted a tree there in front of my house on that strip in the 80s. And that tree now has got a trunk diameter of probably at least 18 inches, and it's probably a 30-foot high tree. So I probably broke all the rules in doing that. But I tell you what, every time I drive by that tree, I say, I planted that tree, and it's a beautiful tree. So
yeah, you're proud of it. You have a story to tell. You made an impact. So that tree, as long as it's not in the way too badly, it's giving a lot of benefits to the people in that neighborhood.
Yeah, it seems like it's worked out okay. So I won't feel too guilty about it. And I'll continue to take pride in putting it there. So you've mentioned several times Tacoma is at the bottom of the stack here for significant cities in the state of Washington, 20% tree cover. So how do we get in this situation?
Well, the way we got in the situation is by having a long history with altering the environment. So converting our natural forest environment, which is what we have here in the South Puget Sound region, and then converting it to an urban environment. Of course, that involves some deforestation. But what we've seen in Tacoma is that the era of deforestation hasn't really ended. Mm. And I think that it's part of our culture. This is a logging town through and through. And so just understanding that this city was founded on the very idea of taking out as many trees as possible and exporting them as a natural resource, I think that's a lot to overcome. Mm-hmm. And I think it is part of our generational awareness, I think. So we're really talking about changing behaviors and changing a culture of cutting trees for any reason. And we have to move into this new mindset of celebrating trees for everything they can do. I think in Tacoma, we celebrate Point Defiance when we go visit a place like that. It's amazing. We're in awe of those large trees that were never cut down, but we don't realize that our neighborhoods could look more like Point Defiance than they do. And there are smart steps we can take to have lots of shade in our neighborhoods, to have trees right where we live instead of trees where we go play on the weekends.
So you just touched on something there that I've wondered about in the past, and I just want to confirm it. So I walk 5 mile drive in Point Defiance regularly, and I walk some of the trails too, of course. And I've wondered, is this a virgin forest? So is it?
Point Defiance is an old growth forest. Yeah, it was acquired by the federal government and then gifted to the city of Tacoma in the late 1800s, I believe, when they realized they weren't going to build a military fort on Point Defiance. And so it was never logged. It was in the era when we were starting to think about national parks and celebrating these large forests and wilderness areas. And so the citizens of Tacoma at the time preserved the forest and didn't cut it down. So we have some really large trees in there. I once went on a tour to find the largest tree in Point Defiance, and I still know where it is. And some foresters had done some measurements and identified a certain tree and then figured out how to walk to it. And I remember learning that it's a Douglas fir, and it's larger than any tree in the whole country of England.
Whoa.
Any tree in the United Kingdom doesn't come close to being as tall as an old growth Douglas fir. And we have many examples of big, beautiful trees in Point Defiance. So when we imagine what Tacoma used to look like, we can think about Point Defiance and then think about the comparison to today, when now we have lots of pavement. It gets really hot in our neighborhoods, and people are sometimes scared to put in a large tree, even if they have lots of space on their property.
Yeah, well, I got to say that there's a lot of people in Tacoma that love Point Defiance. I go out there, especially on a nice day. There's lots of people out there with their kids, their dogs, their bicycles, taking a hike and just feeling the joy of those trees. So personally, I'm just glad to have answered that finally. I often wondered, is this virgin forest? Is this the way it used to be? So you mentioned neighborhoods. And so and you've alluded a little bit to the, I don't know, the general welfare of neighborhoods is related to trees. So I look at a street like Yakima Avenue on the north end. I mean, it's magnificent with trees. I mean, it's every time of the year. I mean, spring when it's budding out or fall when the leaves are turning, it's just wonderful just to drive. It's almost like a peaceful drive after the bustle of other streets in the city. But there are other places that I go. I've got a son who lives down around 48th and Bell, and there are a few trees there, but it's mostly no trees. So how come one neighborhood's got these trees and the other one doesn't?
I love those examples. Yakima Avenue in the north end is so beautiful. And in part, it's beautiful because of the large street trees that it has. It has a fairly generous planting area right next to the street. And people have valued those trees and over time replace them when they age out. So we have a huge tree canopy that shades the entire street. All those trees, though, are dependent on the goodwill of the property owners because that's considered, from the city's standpoint, considered private responsibility, like I said. So there's pressure, I think social pressure in the north end to have trees and maintain a beautiful, shady neighborhood. And in other parts of the city, it's just different. So I think when you consider something like the wealth of a neighborhood, do you have the financial means to plant a tree and then care for it and then pay for a removal of a branch when it threatens some structure or something? A lot of folks don't have that ability to do that. And so they choose not to have trees at all, or someone chooses for them. So if you think about the rates of rentership, that's a very big factor in whether or not a property has trees. Because if you don't live at a house, you don't necessarily care how it feels to be there and live there yourself. So I think it's important for landlords to be aware of this issue and invest in their own properties in terms of creating a nice shady environment for their tenants. So a lot of it comes down to the history of investment. And it's also important to say that certain neighborhoods in Tacoma were redlined in the 1930s, which meant that if you lived in a neighborhood with a high racial diversity, your neighborhood was considered a risky investment and people there could not get loans. So if you lived in Hilltop or where I live in kind of toward the Lincoln district, you wouldn't have been able to get a bank loan. So they literally limited the types of investments people could make in certain neighborhoods and made it so those neighborhoods were more limited in terms of their resources. And now, even today, we're living with this legacy because those areas still have lower opportunity for people, lower rates of education, for example, lower access to jobs. And so that really correlates a lot with the tree coverage in a neighborhood. One of the best indicators of how many trees you have is how much wealth there is in a community. So Tacoma's history of investing in certain neighborhoods and not investing in others is coming back to haunt us.
Well, it seems like we're bumping into this thing again where I can understand why an individual with limited resources, I mean, maybe just struggling to meet family needs, and so somebody says, well, you should spend $100 to plant a tree. It's not going to happen. Whereas somebody who's affluent, $100, you know, it's like they just don't care. And so yet we rely, from what I'm understanding from what you said, we rely on individuals to provide really what is a community resource.
I think that's really well said. Yeah, the urban forest is in the hands of every individual across the city. And so we all have a role to play. We're all part of the same tree canopy. And it's great if we can all make equal investments. But at the same time, we've seen that leaving it up to individuals isn't good enough. And with some infrastructure, we just need a government to step in and take care of it or to do something to regulate it. So we can't have individuals fixing their own potholes on their street, right? It's just better if a government does that. And the same, in my opinion, is true of sidewalks. Tacoma, by the way, has the same attitude towards sidewalks. It's the private responsibility of the homeowner. So if you build a property or renovate your home, you can get fined if you have a sidewalk that's incomplete or has a crack in it or something until you replace the sidewalk. But if you're not doing new construction, you're not required to have a sidewalk at all. So there are sections of neighborhoods, whole neighborhoods without sidewalks right in the city of Tacoma. And it just reflects the ability of individual property owners to pay for those investments.
Yep. Well, I'm in one of those neighborhoods. I live just off North Lexington Street, and there's a whole stretch there where there's no sidewalk, there's no curb, there's no nothing. It's just sort of like street slowly merges into people's yards. So it is just a strange situation politically, I would say. And it just seems like a big challenge. So a little change of direction here. I'm wondering if we have any understanding of what indigenous attitudes, I'm talking about pre-European indigenous people, their attitudes, their relationship with trees. I mean, it had to be important. What do we know about that?
I'm not an expert on indigenous cultures at all, but I know that the native people here, the Puyallup people and the other Coast Salish peoples had a different relationship with nature and a different attitude towards stewardship. And they still do today, because of course they're our neighbors here in Tacoma. I'm thinking specifically about certain trees that have ceremonial importance or cultural importance. The red cedar tree, Western red cedar, is very important in the Puyallup culture. The bark is used for making baskets and canoes and other things. And then too, I think about the south part of Tacoma, which is a little bit elevated and on a prairie, or on a plain, really. That would have been all Gary Oak savanna before the European and American settlers came. And the Gary Oak savanna was maintained by controlled burns by the indigenous people. So by burning, they would maintain the prairie ecosystem, which included grasslands and camas, which was a food source, and then also kept the Douglas fir seedlings at bay. So it was able to stay as an oak habitat, which has special significance for birds and animals. And then I think the acorns also were a food source for people all along the west coast of North America. So having those two different kind of forest ecosystems was really important to the First Nations that lived here. So yeah, there's a difference, I think. And I think it's really upon us today in the modern world to try to have a similar ethic of stewardship toward our environment. Even though we see it now as a city, we should be thinking about what's our habitat like now in this urban environment. How can we improve it? How can we better be stewards of the earth?
Yeah, so well put. And we've been talking mostly about the value for us right here, right now. A lot of aesthetic value, some neighborhood quality value. This is a climate program, so we need to touch on that at least a little bit. So in your work, do you think about the value of trees as carbon sinks? And the reverse of that is how if we cut them down, they're no longer a carbon sink.
I think the urban forest is one of the keys to climate resilience in any city. So thinking about where the trees are, who's benefiting from them, how can we grow the urban forests in neighborhoods that don't have much tree canopy? All of those questions are climate questions. They're, what kind of city do we want to have in the future? What do we want to look like? Who is it going to benefit? And so I think about climate change all the time. I think about what we do at Tacoma Tree Foundation as climate work. And a lot of that is talking with people about what they want for their property. So it does come down to individual conversations. But when we talk on a macro level, we are applying for grants and making the case for planting hundreds of trees in the next few years and thinking about the climate impacts. A lot of funders and governments are thinking about climate impacts and what we can do to be more ready. When we have a heat wave or we have a wildfire smoke event, the tree coverage in a neighborhood really matters because trees help filter out some of those particulates. So it's about climate adaptation primarily. But of course, any trees that you install also have a carbon benefit. So they're going to suck carbon out of the air and prevent it and from reaching the atmosphere. So yeah, it's about the resilience of our community, and forests as a whole have a huge role to play in the next generation of what our planet's going to look like.
So I believe earlier on you made reference to during a hot period that trees provide cooler communities. So did I hear you correctly? So a street like Yakima, is that going to be cooler than M Street down south of I-5?
Yeah, well, I'd actually like you to imagine Yakima Avenue in the north end, shaded by trees, very close to the water. It's going to be, on a given day, like last week, we had temperatures in the 90s. It's going to be 10 to 15 degrees cooler on that North Slope neighborhood than if you follow Yakima down to the south end, where there's just less tree coverage as a whole. So neighborhoods with lots of pavement and low tree coverage are just hotter. And last summer, when we had the really big heat dome event, there were fatalities in the South Tacoma and especially around the Tacoma Mall neighborhood, where we're doing a lot of work right now. There were several people who died just sitting in their homes from the heat, and trees can help to mitigate that. So that's where we're looking for opportunities to put in trees that will have a big impact on the local surrounding.
Well, that's really, I mean, I got to say, I'm amazed to hear you say that it can make a 10 to 15 degree difference on a street. And of course, when we're talking about 90 versus 100, that's a huge difference. So it seems like the case for tree-lined streets can be made right there. So you've written a book. The book is called Ecospatiality. I believe I pronounced that correctly. A place-based approach to American literature. So first off, what does ecospatiality mean?
This book is a result of my dissertation research at Loyola University Chicago. And it's based on my idea that we were thinking about nature in literature in a limited way. So ecospatiality for me just means that we are thinking about geography and nature as being part of the same thing. So I talk about kind of the view that you have from an airplane or from the top of a mountain when you can see sort of the map of the world and you can envision what's below and think about the stories that are there and the history that it contains. So I really got into this idea of what makes a place. And then beyond that, how does literature constitute places? How does reading a book compare to the experience of visiting somewhere and traveling to a new place? So I became very interested in how maps operate and then looked at some books that have mapping imagery or characters using maps and started coming up with my own lens for interpreting literature.
So is that word ecospatiality, is that your word? Did you create that word?
I coined that word as far as I know, but I think it's kind of a natural term. If you think about it, we're talking about the ecological aspects of place and then also the spatial aspects. So if we think about spatial relationships and distances and things, we can't forget that that's part of a living world with, you know, plants and animals and so on. And for me, it's about seeing those two things together, kind of like two lenses and a pair of glasses.
Yep. Well, I think I'm understanding for sure. So I've lived most of my life in the Pacific Northwest between Oregon and Washington, most of it in Washington. And I feel in myself a real connection to the physical environment, for lack of a better term. And you made reference earlier to people liking trees as kind of cross-cultural, or it's almost apolitical, almost apolitical, if you can imagine that in this current environment. And I think that love for our environment here is the same thing. I mean, who doesn't love looking at Mount Rainier in the morning or in the late afternoon, or who doesn't love looking at this tremendous Salish Sea that we have that just seems like it's everywhere. The Olympic Mountains, the list just kind of goes on for me. So here's my question for you. Are you planning on writing a book about ecospatiality in the Pacific Northwest? And, you know, if I can lobby, I guess I would lobby for fiction. I mean, fiction in the sense that I want to hear the story, not so much the nuts and bolts.
Yeah. I don't have any plans right now to write another book. As you can imagine, it's a pretty big undertaking.
Yeah.
And so is managing a nonprofit. So I've kind of moved in a different direction since I was in academia. But I have thought about a different book, which would be kind of a personal story investigating the place where I grew up and the place where some of my ancestors are from. So I can go more into that if you want to hear about it.
Well, we'll save that for another day, but I'll look forward to it and trust you to let me know when it's in the works and when it's actually published. So speaking of fiction, we're just about finished here. Wondering if you have some fiction works that relate to your area of expertise, and in particular, perhaps the future of our environment, that you could recommend for us to read.
I love recommending books. So yes, really happy to talk about this topic. One book that came up in the last few years is called The Overstory by Richard Powers. And that is a book that people talk to me about all the time. They say, oh, hey, you're with Tacoma Tree Foundation. Have you read The Overstory? And it's just a beautiful story about trees and our connections with them, and especially personal connection. And it's one of those novels that takes maybe a dozen characters from different places in the world and then kind of weaves them together through a story that has to do with nature and forests and trees. So I love The Overstory. One climate book that I would recommend is an older book by John Steinbeck, actually. Mm. And it's called To a God Unknown. And this is one of Steinbeck's lesser studied works and lesser read works. But it's about a man who has a certain attitude toward the land that he claims when he goes to California. And when the climate changes drastically in this place, he has to go through a personal process of grief and understanding of what's going to happen to his land. He feels responsibility for it and wants to care for it better. But this book is really interesting and embodies a lot of different attitudes toward nature. So To a God Unknown, it's not a perfect book, but it's very thought-provoking, especially if you care about environmental issues and thinking about how we deal with climate change.
Well, I'll look forward to reading that book myself. And I'm unfamiliar with the title. Of course, I've read a lot of Steinbeck over the years and have reverence for his writing. So I'll look forward to reading that. So we're just about finished here. I do appreciate those recommendations, by the way. Anything else that you'd like to comment on before we finish up today?
I wanted to talk just a little bit about Tacoma Tree Foundation and what we're doing, because we have kind of two main program missions. One is to educate people about the importance of urban trees, like I've been doing today, just talking about why trees matter, how we can improve our tree canopy. And the other is to actually plant trees right here in neighborhoods across Tacoma and the watersheds of Pierce County. So we are out here in the community. We're often giving trees away to people for free, and we give information about which trees to choose, which plants to plant. But I would invite everyone to follow us online and look at our website, TacomaTreeFoundation.org, because we have lots of opportunities to get involved. And that includes opportunities to come plant trees with us. Mm-hmm. We're doing a lot more programming this fall that involves planting in parks and also volunteering to plant on people's private property if they need assistance with putting their trees in. So it's a really fun way to get involved and help make the community better And I think too, it helps you get closer to your neighbors. And the better that social cohesion we have, the better off we're going to be in the long run from a resiliency standpoint.
So I'm assuming that those planting events and related you're talking about are on the website. So if people go to your website, that they can find them. Is that right?
If people go to TacomaTreeFoundation.org and look at our events and workshops or our calendar link, they'll find everything we have coming up. And that includes educational tree walks in parks across Tacoma, which are really popular. And also includes volunteer opportunities.
So awesome. Well, you've given me listeners a lot to think about, and you've certainly changed my perspective, my understanding on how the tree system, if I can use that term, works in the city of Tacoma, at least. So Dr. Lowell Weiss, really appreciate you being with us, taking time, and my best wishes for successful tree planting.
Thanks so much, John.
Thanks so much to Dr. Weiss for the knowledge and energy he brings to bear on his vision of expanding Tacoma's tree canopy. One of my key takeaways is the fact that planting trees on Tacoma streets is up to the residents of those streets. The city has a finger in the pie, but it's mostly a regulatory finger that could use a good dose of additional funding and energizing. The end result of this marginally effective situation is that affluent neighborhoods have trees, and neighborhoods where people are just making ends meet don't. And the irony of that is that those treeless neighborhoods pay a further price in terms of health, quality of life, and challenges adapting to summer heat that is becoming ever hotter as the earth continues to warm. I'm an activist with Citizens Climate Lobby, and Citizens Climate Lobby has recently expanded its vision to include nature-based adaptation and mitigation efforts. And that certainly blends in with the notion of expanding the tree canopy in Tacoma, and I'm going to be working from within Citizens Climate Lobby Tacoma to expand our tree population. So I invite you to go to ccltacoma.org, check it out, and consider giving your weight to bringing trees to Tacoma. There's a quote that says, "A community is a place where an elder will plant a tree knowing that she or he will never rest in its shade." So what I'm offering here is a way for you to be a part of building that tree community. Be sure to check out the program links attached to today's conversation, links that will allow you to look more closely at the dearth of trees in Tacoma, allow you to connect with actual activities where we can plant trees, encourage others to plant trees, and most of all, be doing something in the real world to contribute to the climate change adaptation and mitigation capabilities of trees. Those links are at ccltacoma.org. You can contact me at John, J-O-H-N, at ccltacoma.org for comments on this program or to make suggestions for future programs. This program, along with all other locally produced Radio Tacoma programs, can be found on the KTAH website under Programming. So until we talk again, remember that all great victories were almost great defeats, and always live like the mountain is out. Take care now.